Hey, I'm Scott, and it is Azure Friday, and we're here with Matt Snyder, and we're getting a little bit deeper into the fabric.
Yeah, Service Fabric back again. So what we're going to look at today is one of the programming models that Service Fabric gives developers to write some of those decomposed, upgradable services that we talked about. The idea behind reliable services is, you know, you want to write your business code, you want to do it using basically normal C-sharp programming model stuff you're used to, standard data structures, dictionaries, queues, stuff like that. You're used to writing applications a certain way, but you're not used to them running in this crazy environment, right, where machines come up and down and things fail, and there's just a whole bunch of complexity that you have to manage. Well, the good news is that with Service Fabric, you write your application more or less like you used to, and then you can put it into this environment, and Service Fabric, because it understands your application, can take care of a whole bunch of that complexity for you.
Oh, really? Because we used to do things with like transactions and rollbacks and compensating transactions and blah, 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 you know, and it was like as soon as you wanted your application to be reliable, you had to write it differently.
Yeah, reliable is the operative word, and so with Service Fabric, what we're going to give you is we're going to give you those things that look like those C-sharp data structures. They look like concurrent dictionary. They look like queue, but they're actually doing a whole bunch of work underneath the hood on your behalf.
Do I just change the namespace and swap?
More or less.
Brain transplant?
You know, we'll see here there's things like try, get, value, async, and all sorts of stuff that looks about the same.
But the good news
is that we're also giving you a neat thing is this transaction line here, right? This create transaction, you go, man, is this DTC? Is this two-phase commit?
I was just going to say, why are you bringing DTC back into my life?
Nope. It's gone. It's dead, hopefully, forever. But what you wanted out of DTC is, even if something fails, right, I don't want to lose my work.
Right.
And
you wanted the scope. You wanted to say, this is important.
This is important, and this isn't going to die. If I get out of here, it's good forever.
Right.
And so that's actually one of the things that Service Fabric gives you. So
what do we have here?
Well, right here we have, this is actually the boilerplate that gets created when you just create a new Service Fabric stateful service project in Visual Studio.
Okay.
So if you download our SDK and install that, you'll get these project types related to Service Fabric. You create one. This is what it's going to look like. I've got a few more things in here because we might get to them.
Sure.
But basically, you just get this. And what it does is it's pretty much what we always do is you count something.
Of course.
Right. You want a number that's going to go up and up and up and up.
And be stateful.
And
because
be stateful.
It could come away. It could go away, and you want the number to stay there.
Right. And one of the things is, you know, like there's no SQL database here. No blob store up the sleeves. Right. Mm. This is all going to be happening on your local box or in the Azure environment or any other multi-machine environment on those machines themselves. There's no other service that it's talking to behind the hood, behind the scenes. And that's because Service Fabric takes care of the state that you put in our data structures. We make sure is highly available, reliable, and consistent under the hood for you.
Well, in the context of a web app that people are familiar with, we could imagine a counter where I stick something in the application object.
Yep.
And then we learn that, app pools, you know, recycle.
Yeah, come up and go so down.
Or this could be a session. Well, sessions expire.
Yep.
This could be a cache. Well, caches get too big and then they eject things.
Yep.
What is this data structure? It's just some magic thing that I trust in the fabric?
It's not magic, right? It's all computer science, right? So you can treat it like a dictionary. Mm-hmm. Now, we call them reliable dictionaries because with this transaction scope, and we'll scroll down just a little bit so you can see where it commits.
Right there.
Basically, anything that happens inside of this scope is guaranteed to either all happen or not happen, right? So this, if it adds this number and then you get past this commit async number as soon as that, you know, happens, if this machine dies or this process crashes or there's a Azure host update and the VM gets yanked out from underneath you.
Or the app gets upgraded.
Whatever has happened is guaranteed to stay there. So if a client calls in, puts their thing in this dictionary, disconnects, reconnects later, and a bunch of different failures have happened, their stuff will still be there. And again, this is without that complex checkpointing back and forth to some external store. Now, you know, why is that useful? I've used databases for years. Why do I not want to use them here? The main reason is just kind of, first of all, complexity. You have that other thing that you have to manage and control. And for a lot of, you know, different types of applications, that's overkill, right? You just need your ASP.NET session state, or you need you know, some little piece of information, like a count of something that you don't want to have die.
Yeah.
Right? But you don't want to have to go stand a blob store in order to just keep doing that.
Well, and the amount of code, even if you were going to use something like blob store as an example, like some people may be watching this saying, oh, I just put everything in blob store.
Yeah, and that's fine.
But that's going to end up being 20 or 30 lines of code as you put it there and make sure you didn't corrupt it, make sure it's still there and check it and try, you know. It's a const, but you're basically putting it in this protected scope.
Yep, exactly.
And it's a very comfortable model.
Yeah, and it feels natural, right? As a normal C# programmer, I'm just dealing with the data structures like I'm used to using. Now, one of the things that this transaction scope is actually very interesting because you can do stuff like this, which is I'm going to go ahead and say that I've actually got this other data structure. In this case, I've got a queue. And queues are interesting because you can put work into them and then pull them out later. Mm-hmm. So what you could imagine doing, and I'll get rid of some of this goop, is, you know, when a call comes into your service, you immediately grab it, you spin up one of these transaction scopes, you put the work, the request, into that queue, and then you commit, and you say you're done. Now, you've actually got that request, you've captured it, and because that transaction completed, you know that if something bad happens now, you've got that request, that user request is with you.
Right.
Now, but now you want to do something with it, right? Now you actually want to process it.
Uh-huh.
So you start up another transaction, you pull the request out of the queue, you do something with it, in this case we're just putting it in to one of our dictionaries. That's all within the same transaction scope. So when you commit this, you're guaranteeing that that queue, that item has come out of that queue, you've done your work, and you've put that thing in that dictionary.
Now, traditionally, in Azure or in cloud services, you'd have, you know, one worker capturing requests and putting things on a queue, and another entirely independent worker, independently scalable, independently manageable worker. Do you do the same thing here, or do you not have to?
You don't really have to a lot of the times, and if you want to scale out, we can talk about that. But the key thing is that, like, this, you're never going to get a situation where I've pulled the thing out of the queue and then not done the work. If I pull it out of the queue here, and then before I get done with this commit, something dies, that item is still in the queue. When the guy who takes over, that item is still in the queue. You don't have to do anything really special for it. It's exactly once it's going to come in and out of that queue. So you get some really strong benefits without having to do anything fancy, right? I didn't have to think about failure modes. I didn't think have about peaking.
Exactly. Try, get, you know, and then also, bad actors or bad messages.
Yep.
You don't have to deal with those things.
Right. So to the question of scale, right? Let's say I have thousands and thousands of requests coming in, and they're all going into conceptually this one queue, right? How do you deal with that? Well, that's way more work than one machine's going to handle. And, you know, Service Fabric, we've talked about how it lets your services run on multiple machines. Well, what does running on multiple machines mean for stateful things? Things that have some amount of data that they really want to hang on to.
Well, where is the state?
Right. Well, it's in there somewhere, but where it is.
But is it available to everyone on another machine?
No. You only want to replicate it a few times because that's expensive, right?
Because in the old days, we'd have like in-memory databases, and we'd use Redis, and we'd have this giant pile of state. And I've heard things about like Facebook holding the entire graph in memory.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you certainly could do things like that. There's nothing that stops you. But with Service Fabric, we actually have a very first-class notion of partitioning that state. So when you stand up your service, you can say, hey, just stand it up. But as soon as you actually want to scale, usually what you'll say is, hey, stand up that service and carve it into 100 partitions.
Like, A through L, M through Z, Yellow Pages type
Something like that. Yeah, you can do that. You can use integers. You've got a hash algorithm of your own design or your favorites.
Okay.
And you use that to say, this piece of work, I know it's independent from everybody else. I just want to make sure this request gets processed, right? It doesn't have to get processed by, you know, somebody in particular. I just want to make sure it gets handled.
Mm-hmm.
So you take that request, you use your hashing algorithm, you get some ID, A through L, or number 12345, and you just say, hey, Service Fabric, tell me where the queue is that owns this number, owns this piece of work. And then we give you back the address of where that queue currently is in the cluster, and you send it there. And it then drops right into the queue and gets processed in this workflow that we've talked about.
Now, when I worked on large-scale transaction processors in COM Plus in, 10, 15 years ago, there was always a central thing that knew too much. And we would always try to make it know less, but we would always end up with we'd have multiple transaction processors, and then there'd be the transaction processor user manager, you know what I mean? Is there something that knows too much? Is there a single point of failure?
There is no single point of failure inside of Service Fabric. In fact, you can take a Service Fabric cluster that's running your workloads, turn the whole thing off, put the machines in a closet, go away for a year, come back, take the machines out of the closet, turn them back on. System Fabric basically reinitializes itself, remembers that it had some system services that were keeping track of your work, finds those, recreates those.
Right.
They remember that your work was running, and then it recreates your work. You pick up right where you left off.
Those are those kind of like workflow type things we used to use BizTalk for, where you could like, you know, dehydrate and rehydrate, things like that. What about if I have a different version of this method, and I'm going to go and upgrade this project, so now I've gone from version 1 to version 2, I'm doing this in production.
Yep.
How do we manage that? In the web world, you drain IP address, you know, you drain people off, and you,
Yeah, you don't want to really do that. So one, I'll show you something that we have here. This is getting into a little bit of what we call our packaging thing. And what it lets you do is it lets you say, hey, I have this piece of code. We call this a code package, right? I have this piece of code. There's actually a whole bunch of DLLs here, but the main thing you care about, Service Fabric, is this executable. This is going to be the thing that you launch. This is my code. Now, you'll notice something about this code package, which is that it has this version on it. That version is how we know that you've changed something. So if you fixed a bug or you have a new feature, you know, do what we're doing in Visual Studio. You change your code, you recompile it, you come here, you bump up this number, and then you repackage it and give it to Service Fabric and say, please roll this out. At that point, we take care of saying, hey, we're going to copy this package down, we're going to shut down the old one, we're going to bring this one back up. But let's say something goes bad. Like, let's say that it doesn't come back up, or let's say that it has an error in it, or that it can't talk with some other service. The upgrade doesn't proceed. We wait for everything to be healthy again. We have this notion of health inside Service Fabric, where there's a bunch of things we know about your application kind of by default. You can also tell us things.
You can broadcast what you feel health is.
Yep. You can say, hey, my synthetic transaction is a little too slow, or hey, this took a little longer than it should have, or I encountered some unknown state here. You can tell us these things, and basically if that during that upgrade, we're going, you know, kind of machine by machine, upgrade domain by upgrade domain, if something goes wrong, we know to stop and wait. Maybe it'll resolve itself, and we give you ways of saying, hey, wait 5 minutes for it to resolve itself, and if it doesn't, what do you do? Well, Service Fabric, we have a couple different options, right? First of all, if you're very hands-on, right, you can say, hey, don't do anything, right? So Service Fabric at that point will throw up its hands and say, I was told not to touch it. I'm just going to leave it here. But normally what we see people do, because, you know, upgrades are traditionally these white-knuckle affairs, right, where you push the button and then you hope that it doesn't whack anything.
Well, and that's why people are so afraid. They'll make upgrades monthly, and that's entirely a organizational willpower and just fear. If you are afraid of your own system.
Yeah, it's fear-based engineering, and we want to get away from that, right?
Good.
So in Service Fabric, naturally what will happen if you go kind of the defaults is that upgrade will start, it'll realize something's wrong because of that health information. First of all, we'll populate that so you can see it. And secondly, we'll roll that back. We'll take the old version of the code, version 1 that you'd given us previously, shut down version 2 that isn't working, put version 1 back on, start it back up, and you didn't have an incident. You didn't have an outage. You didn't have anything that your customers could see. It just went back to the way it was, and you get a report saying, hey, we failed the upgrade.
Very cool. Man, we are learning all about reliable services and Azure Service Fabric here on Azure Friday.